Welcome to Learning English, a daily 30-minute program from the Voice of America. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson. This program is aimed at English learners, so we speak a little slower, and we use words and phrases, especially written, for people learning English.
Today on the program, you will hear stories from Katie Weaver, Phil Dierking, and Alice Bryant. Later, Steve Ember will present our American history series, The Making of a Nation. But first, here is Katie Weaver.
The United States Justice Department, on Thursday, sided with Asian American students suing Harvard University over its consideration of race in admissions. The department said in a court filing Thursday that Harvard has failed to demonstrate that it does not discriminate on the basis of race. It noted what it described as substantial evidence that Harvard is carrying out what the department called racial balancing. Attorney General Jeff Sessions added, "No American should be denied admission to school because of their race." The Trump administration has been pushing for admissions policies that do not use race in the consideration process. In 2014, the group Students for Fair Admission, or SFFA, argued that Harvard unfairly treats Asian Americans who have strong school records. The Ivy League school denied the accusation. It said it does not discriminate and will fight to defend its right to consider race in admissions. The U.S. Supreme Court permits colleges and universities to consider race in admissions. But it says this must be done for the narrow purpose of creating a mix of ethnicities at schools. The court also says the practice should be limited in time, and the court bars the establishment of acceptance levels based on race. The case between the SFFA and Harvard could become the High Court's next test on the issue. Harvard said it was disappointed by the Justice Department's position. A university statement said the school will continue to vigorously defend the legal right of every college and university to consider race in college admissions. The statement added that the Supreme Court has upheld that legal right for more than 40 years. I'm Katie Weaver.
The campaign to stop killer robots is urging the United Nations to begin talks about banning the use and development of autonomous weapons systems. Representatives from more than 70 countries are attending a five-day meeting in Geneva on the Convention on Conventional Weapons. Autonomous weapons systems are military robots that can independently search and attack targets based on their programming. They are often called Killer Robots. The campaign to stop killer robots is a worldwide coalition of 76 organizations in 32 countries. Members include Human Rights Watch, Amnesty International, Minds Action Canada, and the Nobel Women's Initiative. Activists say that support is growing for countries to negotiate a ban on the devices during the yearly CCW meeting in late November. The campaign to stop killer robots reports that 26 countries have joined the call for a ban since the last CCW meeting in April. The group says China is agreeable to a ban on using these weapons, though not on their development. The coalition also says Russia has announced its support for a non-binding agreement. Mary Wareham of Human Rights Watch runs the campaign to stop killer robots. She says pressure is increasing on the United States and other countries to support a ban on fully autonomous weapons. I'm Phil Dierking.
It would be impossible to go through life without asking questions. So, learning to form questions correctly is an important exercise for English learners. But it can also be one of the most frustrating ones. There are a few reasons for this. First, many questions use auxiliary verbs. Auxiliary verbs are known as helping verbs. We add them to main verbs to help make our meaning clearer. The verbs do, be, and have act as auxiliary verbs in many kinds of questions. Second, there are about 6 kinds of questions in the English language. In earlier everyday grammar programs, we told you about 3 complex kinds: tag questions, reported questions, and indirect questions. But we have not yet told you about the 3 most basic kinds of questions: subject questions, object questions, and yes or no questions. Each kind follows its own grammar rules. Today, we'll tell you about subject questions. Subject questions are questions we ask when we want information about the subject of something. The subject of a sentence is the person or thing that performs the action. We use subject questions to ask who or which person or thing does something. For example, who rode the train to work? And which fruits make the best juice? Subject questions follow the same subject-verb structure as statements. Who rode the train to work, for example, has the same structure as its statement form would have. I rode the train to work. Unlike some kinds of questions, we do not invert the subject and verb in subject questions. You can usually identify a subject question by looking for the word who or which at the beginning of it. But not all questions beginning with these words are subject questions. We'll say more on that later. You may have noticed that the examples who rode the train to work and which fruits make the best juice used simple verb tenses. Subject questions often use the simple tenses, simple present, simple past, and simple future. However, sometimes subject questions do use other verb tenses, usually the present continuous or past continuous. In those cases, you will see auxiliary verbs before the main verbs. Let's hear examples of present and past continuous. Here is the present continuous.
Who is coming with me to pick up the supplies?
The auxiliary verb be appears as is. And here's the past continuous.
Who was watching the dog when it got out?
The auxiliary verb be appears as was. Despite that subject questions with these verb tenses use the auxiliary verb be, subject questions with simple tenses do not use auxiliary verbs when the questions are positive. Think back to one of the examples of a positive subject question. We did not say, who did ride the train to work? We said, who rode the train to work? But suppose we wanted to ask a negative subject question. We would need to use the auxiliary verb do. And the auxiliary appears immediately after the question word, who or which. Listen to a subject question in its negative form.
Who didn't ride the train to work?
The original question used the past tense verb rode. So the negative version used didn't ride, which is also the past tense. Now let's change another positive subject question into the negative. The question is, who likes pizza? Notice that it's in the present tense. Let's hear its negative version.
Who doesn't like pizza?
Notice that the negative version, doesn't like, is also in the present tense. Throughout your English learning, you may have seen positive questions that began with who or which, but still used the auxiliary verb do. Listen to an example.
Who does she want to write about?
But do not be confused by this. This question is not asking about the subject. It is asking about the object. The answer, for example, might be, she wants to write about Malala Yousafzai. Here, then, the question is really asking about the object, which is Malala Yousafzai, not about the subject, which is she. If it were a subject question, it would be something like this.
Who wants to write about Malala Yousafzai?
Again, notice the auxiliary verb do is not present. Okay, now that you know the key features of a subject question, let's hear a couple of statements and think about how to make them into subject questions.
Sherry broke the glass.
Sherry is the subject of the sentence. Broke is the verb, and it's in simple past. If we wanted to ask a question where the answer is the subject, Sherry, the question would be,
who broke the glass?
Here's another statement. Take a listen and think about how to make it into a subject question.
This motorbike gets the best gas mileage.
This motorbike is the subject. The verb is gets and is simple present. If we wanted to ask a question where the answer is the subject, this motorbike, we would ask,
which motorbike gets the best gas mileage?
Forming questions in English can be tricky, but understanding each kind can go a long way toward improving your English. Join us again next week to learn more about forming questions. I'm Alice Bryant.
Welcome to the Making of a Nation, American History in VOA Special English. I'm Steve Ember. We begin the story of Bill Clinton, America's 42nd president. He led the United States for 8 years, from January of 1993 to January of 2001. Our story begins in 1991. In February of that year, American-led forces won Operation Desert Storm to end Iraqi occupation of Kuwait. Iraqi leader Saddam Hussein considered Kuwait a province of Iraq. He had invaded the oil-rich country in August 1990. Coalition airstrikes began 4 months later in January against Iraqi targets. The ground war took place in February and lasted just 4 days. The American-led victory in the Gulf War added to the popularity of President George H.W. Bush. 1991 was also the last year for the USSR, the Union of Soviet Socialist Republics. The collapse of the Soviet Union brought an end to more than 40 years of Cold War tensions and fears of nuclear war. In the United States, attention was turning to the 1992 presidential election. Many political observers believed President Bush would easily win a second term. But the economy was not doing much to help his chances. The United States went through a serious recession that lasted 8 months, from July 1990 to March 1991. Unemployment rose to the highest level in years. At the same time, the federal government was deeply in debt after years of borrowing. Bush was a Republican. Democrats saw his falling popularity as a good opportunity to retake the White House. They placed their hopes on William Jefferson Clinton. At the time, he was the young governor of the southern state of Arkansas. He was gaining national attention by talking about issues like education. Bill Clinton was born on August 19, 1946, in the small town of Hope, Arkansas. His name at birth was William Jefferson Blythe. His father, also named William Jefferson Blythe, was a traveling salesman. He died in a car accident 3 months before his son was born. At the age of two, the boy was sent to live with his grandparents while his mother, Virginia Blythe, studied to become a nurse. She married a man named Roger Clinton when her son was four. The family moved to Hot Springs, Arkansas. When he was 15, William Jefferson Blythe legally changed his name to William Jefferson Clinton. His stepfather drank too much and was sometimes abusive to him, his mother, and his stepbrother, Roger Jr. But Bill Clinton did well in school. He also developed a strong early interest in politics and ran for student offices in high school. In 1963, while still in high school, Bill Clinton went to Washington as a delegate to a Boys Nation program for young leaders. There, he got to meet President John F. Kennedy. Years later, Richard Stratton, who was president of Boys Nation in 1963, remembered that meeting.
It was a beautiful, bright summer day. It was July 24, 1963. And we were all assembled in the Rose Garden at the White House as a group, waiting for the president to come out. We all sat there, riveted in attention.
We want to welcome you to the White House, particularly because this belongs to all of you and because it's so intimately connected with the best in American history.
I was about the third or fourth person in, and he started here, and I sort of muscled my way up and made sure I got to shake hands with the president. He was quite generous. He went down the line and shook hands with a pretty good number of us who were there that night. It had a very profound impact on me. I think that, you know, it's something that I carried with me always. And I was very fortunate that someone took a picture of it and gave it to me, so I was always able to remember it.
Right after that frame, the famous frame of him shaking hands with JFK, there's another picture from the same film showing President Kennedy shaking hands with Jeff Keyes, another one of our boys, him from Florida, and Bill Clinton looking down at his hand with this wonderful look like I'll never wash it again.
Bill Clinton went on to study at Georgetown University in Washington. He graduated in 1968 and won a Rhodes Scholarship to attend Oxford University in England. He spent 2 years there before entering Yale Law School in New Haven, Connecticut. There, he met another law student, Hillary Rodham. She was from just outside Chicago, and she shared his deep interest in politics and public service. They both graduated in 1973. Bill Clinton returned to Arkansas. Hillary Rodham went on to become a lawyer involved in the congressional investigation of the Watergate scandal. That case led to the resignation of President Richard Nixon in 1974. That same year, Bill Clinton, a Democrat, ran for Congress in Arkansas. He lost the close race to a popular Republican. A year later, he and Hillary Rodham married. And a year after that, in 1976, Arkansas voters elected him Attorney General, the state's top law enforcement officer. In 1978, Bill Clinton ran for governor and easily won. He became, at the age of 32, the state's youngest governor ever. While Bill Clinton was governor, the federal government operated a detention center in Arkansas for Cuban refugees. The refugees rioted. That rioting hurt Bill Clinton politically when he ran for re-election. His opponent argued that he should have done more to get the government to hold the Cubans someplace else. Also, Clinton had supported unpopular new taxes. In 1980, Bill Clinton was defeated in his campaign for a second term as governor of Arkansas. But he regained the office in the next election 2 years later. That was before the term of office was increased from 2 years to 4 years. Clinton went on to serve as governor of Arkansas until 1992. While he was governor, education in the state improved. More students finished high school, and more went on to college. The state increased requirements for teachers and also increased their pay. Governor Clinton also expanded early learning programs for children from poor families. While governor, Bill Clinton also became active in Democratic Party leadership at the national level.
Make no mistake, this election is about change. Change in our party, change in our leadership, change in our nation. And that is why today I proudly announce my candidacy for President of the United States of America.
In 1991, Bill Clinton announced that he would run for the Democratic nomination for president. His main opponents were Paul Tsongas and Jerry Brown. Tsongas was a former senator from Massachusetts. Brown had been governor of California. Paul Tsongas later withdrew, and Bill Clinton easily defeated Jerry Brown for the nomination. Democrats held their national nominating convention in New York City in July 1992.
And so, in the name of all those who do the work, pay the taxes, raise the kids, and play by the rules, in the name of the hardworking Americans who make up our forgotten middle class, I proudly accept your nomination for President of the United States.
Bill Clinton chose Senator Al Gore of Tennessee as his running mate for vice president. The Republicans nominated President Bush and Vice President Dan Quayle for a second term. Another candidate in the 1992 presidential election was a Texas businessman named Ross Perot. He competed as an independent, a so-called third-party candidate. His choice for vice president was James Stockdale, a former high-level Navy officer and pilot. He had been shot down and held as a prisoner of North Vietnam for 7 years. During the campaign, Ross Perot argued that neither of the major candidates was taking the national debt seriously enough. He also warned of the loss of American jobs.
To those of you in the audience who are business people, pretty simple. If you're paying $12, $13, $14 an hour for factory workers, and you can move your factory south of the border, pay $1 an hour for your labor, have no health care, that's the most expensive single element making a car, have no environmental controls, no pollution controls, and no retirement, and you don't care about anything but making money, there will be a giant sucking sound going south.
Bill Clinton criticized President Bush for not doing more about the economy and unemployment. Bush pointed out that the Democrats controlled Congress, and he said the Democrats had defeated most of his proposals. The president also talked about his foreign policy successes, and most famously, he promised not to raise taxes.
My opponent won't rule out raising taxes, but I will, and the Congress will push me to raise taxes, and I'll say no, and they'll push again, and I'll say, read my lips. No new taxes.
But raise taxes he did, and many Americans remembered that on Election Day. Bill Clinton and Al Gore won the 1992 election. They received about 45 million votes, or 6 million more than President Bush and Vice President Quayle. Ross Perot and James Stockdale received close to 20 million, or 19% of the popular vote. Bill Clinton became America's 42nd president on January 20th, 1993. At the age of 46, he was the third youngest person ever elected president. At his inauguration, the new president said there was no longer a division between foreign and domestic issues.
The world economy, the world environment, the world AIDS crisis, the world arms race, they affect us all. Today, as an old order passes, the new world is more free but less stable. Communism's collapse has called forth old animosities and new dangers. Clearly, America must continue to lead the world we did so much to make.
But even as he took office, critics were questioning Clinton's character. There had been accusations during the campaign about relationships with other women in Arkansas. And there were questions about an investment that he and Hillary Clinton had made in a land development project back in 1978.
And that's our program for today. Listen again tomorrow to learn English through stories from around the world. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson.